You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, this is cool. Welcome to the show. Good to have you. This is Thomas Ronken. You're a CBS colleague, right? You work with us at CBS at HQ. You're also the man. Well, you were the former U.S. men's national team U-20 manager, and you're the man who just happened to discover Clint and Charlie. So we wanted to get you on and just kind of tell us that story, how that went.
Well, first, royalty, 200-plus caps here. Du sprichst Deutsch, Clint und Charlie, and ein bisschen more sprechen, die beiden gar nicht, Bobby. Richtig. And there's different stories here. I went to Furman Clemson to see Stuart Holden, who played for Clemson, and Ricardo Clark, that was already part of my under-20s, because we were very late in the process in our preparation for the 2003 World Cup that actually got pushed back because of Desert Storm, the war. And that's how Clint actually became the last player to make it. So I sit there for 5 minutes, and I'm going, whoa. First, he's in midfield. He's got number two. Well, I come through the Ajax system. Number two is a right back, you know, in terms of numbers, you know, 1 through 11. And this cat is just wheeling and dealing, trying things that I've not seen before of any other American player, quite frankly. And then you do research and you find out why, you know, why his environment shaped him like the environment shaped you. So our first camp, after I introduce myself and I say, you know, I would like to bring you to the under-20 camp, we're in Los Angeles. I asked Ziggy Smith, the coach of the LA Galaxy, if we could play friendly. He said, yeah, there's no problem, we're in the Rose Bowl. First touch of Clint Dempsey, and this is Alexi Lalas, Kobe Jones, and a pretty good team that Ziggy had around that time, obviously. First touch, nutmegs Alexi. Kobe comes 30 yards, studs him up. Ziggy goes to me, you gotta take him off. I understand in a hierarchy that that's, you know, you don't stand up.
Disrespect.
A guy, exactly, correct.
That's all I knew.
So I went to him, I said, this is terrible, and then I went to him, don't ever change. He didn't play much in 2003 because I had a good team in his spine with Eddie, who's the Golden Boot winner, Convy, Ricardo Clark, Ned Grabovoy, Santino,
Freddie Adu,
Mike McGee. Yeah. Yeah, it was a pretty good team. So he played in two games off the bench a little bit. The last game that we won the group against Korea. South Korea, very good.
I almost went in against Argentina, but I didn't go.
Remember,
they scored?
I know, Clint.
You had me on the line.
Clint.
They scored, you're like, hey, go sit down. I said, all right.
One of my greatest mistakes that I didn't do that. I should have gone with my gut, but I was a typical coach, okay, 1-1, overtime, whatever. I should have been more daring, so sorry about that.
What about Chuck?
Chuck I saw really in Massachusetts in a youth tournament, initially. And then there was some regional stuff, but he stood out because of his tremendous speed, athleticism, the ability in every game to get literally 3 or 4 times in front of the goalkeeper in a 1v1 situation, which is unique as well, different than Clint's, obviously. But he couldn't really score, you know, unsophisticated. He's a high school All-American wrestler, this guy. So he had all the American typical experiences, whereas Clint, no. I'm playing against Mexicans that are 25 years old, and I got to be combative with my brother Ryan that took me there. So
Clint was a rude boy.
Charlie thought he was damn and one. He had his damn headband, sweatband on, Boston College.
He did.
Collar popped and everything.
Scoring goals against Revolution.
Hey, for the culture.
Yeah.
Hey, question. We had Josie Altidore here, right? And he was talking about the fact that one time Clint wanted to fight him. You obviously thought that Clint was a tough guy, right? In a fight, who do you pick, Clint or Josie?
Clint.
You do?
Yeah.
Why? Scrappy, huh?
I've talked enough to Paul Mariner and Stevie Nicol that I know what went on in New England Revolution.
Ooh.
You don't want to screw with Clint, believe me.
So do
and
I.
Some tough guys wanted to take him to task, by the way. And they all went, okay, let me go the other way.
I know those stories.
So you held your own.
Hey, man.
But going back to Chuck.
These eyes, I can see every punch being thrown.
Yeah. Peripheral vision.
Yeah. Had that panoramic with these big old eyes.
But I firmly believe that in these Mexican leagues, illegal Mexican leagues, you had to learn how to protect yourself.
Oh, for sure. For sure. You had to. I mean, it's survival of the fittest. And if you disrespected them, which was the style that I played, they're trying to break your legs. So you learn how to jump out of tackles and protect yourself and, you know, deal with, like, what it's like to play in CONCACAF, basically. So, right. I mean, it really shaped who I was as a player and gave me that grit that I needed to make it at the next level.
And Charlie then ends up a year later in the Mill Cup becoming the MVP. First time we won a prestigious tournament, which it was. Scores the winner against Serbia, Montenegro. Scores a hat trick in the finals against Northern Ireland. And then Ziggy Schmidt drops you off the 205 World Cup team.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
Not my doing, okay?
I know. But when you get dropped and it hurts you to the core, that's the only way you grow through those moments. I'm a player that always, like, similar to Clint, I play with a chip on my shoulder. I knew I had to provide for my family, and I knew that this was my way out. I had worked my whole life to get to this position, and, you know, there's certain moments that you have playing in the Mill Cup, the one before that where I get 20 chances and I don't score, but you see those moments. I have what it takes to be a professional and being successful, and when I won the MVP in that Mill Cup, when we won, I knew I wanted to be in Europe. I was destined to be in Europe, and I knew I had what it took to succeed.
Does it hurt you to your core when you get overlooked, Mo? Thomas, you overlooked the man.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I'm like, man, he got discovered. He got discovered, and we were same age. So what happened there, huh? What happened?
Bad scouting. I'll be real honest with you, because if I look at 207, 208, 209, because all three of you ended up at the same time, pretty much at the senior men's national team. Different routes. You through, you know, first pick in the MLS draft, rookie of the year, boom, here you are. And I did go, because at that time, I lived still in D.C. because I coached D.C. United for many years and won a championship. So I stayed there when I was the under 20 coach. So I did go to Maryland quite a lot. And I had no idea why you never even got on my radar. Because I got decent eyes. In saying that amazes me if I look back at your career and what you could have done also for my under 20 team. So yes, Kate, I missed quite a few guys. My team at that time was mostly college guys. So I tried to travel as many cities as I could to watch guys play, as I did with Furman and Clemson. It was a plane every time. And I had to pick the best college players. And for whatever reason, Mo, I didn't pick you, dude.
No, but I mean, in fairness, right? Like, that's just...
It's got to be difficult, though. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, you got to catch the player on the right game. How many games did you watch each player play? You maybe go to see them play twice in a year.
Next.
And they had to show out.
And you were wearing a Bojangles knee brace, too. So that wasn't a good look.
Right. We still cooked y'all with that knee brace on, too.
True.
Hey, they put a statue at BC. Hey. I put a banger on them over there. But it just speaks to the different pathways, you know what I mean? And everyone doesn't peak at the same time, so maybe at that time there were players that you felt were better. So just, I don't take it as a slight. In my mind, I was working towards something, and like, it was just fueled to my fire, motivation. I wanted to get to that point. I wanted to get to that position. It didn't happen in that moment, but it wasn't going to deter me. It wasn't going to stop me. I was just hungrier.
Hey, what about you? Played your whole career over here, right? In America,
yep.
NASL,
mm-hmm.
Played with Cruyff.
Yes.
Yes? I mean, as a Dutchman, too, that's got to be special, right? Any memories that stand out? Anything you can share?
Can you see my
goosebumps.
Hair? I was 21. I was an okay player, but not great. Rinus Michels, the great Rinus Michels. If you talk about generational or in the last century, the best coaches, probably Rinus Michels and Johan Cruyff that shaped the game that Pep Guardiola and Manchester City are playing right now, calls me and goes, I have $1,000. A month, you're gonna share a car with an American. I'm 21, I just finished my studies, and you gotta say yes or no, where you wanna come to LA, because he became the coach of LA Aztecs. I get her there, Johan Cruyff becomes a teammate, Wim Suurbeer, who played in two World Cup finals, also from Ajax, Ruud Krol, quite a few Dutch players. And I played as a six, so every game I had to mark number 10. So George Best, TR, today you're gonna mark George Best. And here I am as a 21-year-old, all heroes of mine, Cruyff the biggest because I'm from the Netherlands. an incredible experience in terms of...
How did that go, marking George Best?
Have you ever seen his best goal, George Best, in 19... The NASL had awards for the best goal of the year. It was 1980 of 81 best goal. It's against the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. We scored big time offside goal. Gerd Müller, by the way, was a teammate. And because I speak German, he was my roommate. Long story, but whatever. Bestie's upset. So he gets the ball from the kickoff. Goes past like two forwards, and then it could be as a good, I didn't defend. I'm the first confrontation. He nutmegs me. He stops, allows me to come back again. He gets around me again, cuts a few more people. Upper V. I don't know if you guys ever been in the San Jose Stadium. Takes the ball, and you're gonna go upper rim. This is before the half. Gets in his car, never returns for the goal, for the game. But that becomes the goal of the year. Where I look silly, which I'm proud of, by the way. Doesn't matter.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
You were so different than the typical coaches I've had ever had because your storytelling, one, personality,
outgoing.
You'd even, you know, you were just
nature of the beast, brother.
You were so real. smoking cigarettes sometimes, like.
Oh my God, you're killing me, dude.
It was refreshing for a young player knowing that you had played with the best of the best. And
it's okay to not fit in, to be different.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You didn't have to be super safe and play simple. You could try shit, you know what I mean? I think that's a big problem that Americans face is they're always scared about messing up. And then that's what I appreciate is like, hey, don't ever change. Like, keep doing your shit. Like, that kind of stuff, it's lost upon a lot, I think, the youth, because I don't think a lot of the youth players have that coach that's telling them, go out and try shit, you know? Like, express yourself. Hey, don't be scared.
We had a camp in the Netherlands, and we had a hard training session. And typically, in these youth setups, they have things planned for you. There's no free time. And Thomas, we train hard, and he's like, go have a fucking fun time in the city. And I was like,
and what'd you
big
do?
Big mistake, by the way.
I was like, what?
I lost three times there. Almost my job. Seriously. That was one of them in Amsterdam, because you guys are underage. If it wasn't for Bruce Arena and Bob Bradley, I think Klinsmann one time bailed me out as well. So it was the last day in Amsterdam. I go, 10 o'clock on the bus. They're all going, oh my God, no curfew. So, guy's bleeding. How you doing? Well, I'm somewhere, it's called the red light district, I think, coach, and I'm looking at somebody, and all of a sudden I'm getting hold. He said, yeah, dude, you either gotta go in or you gotta move on. Business, you know, there's pimps out there.
Well, that's how that works.
But these guys didn't know Kate. They were all protected 18-year-old kids from Stanford.
Poor little American boys, didn't know.
They know Harvard.
I didn't know nothing about the red light district.
Did you after the trip?
I felt like an alien. There were some guys who were curious about what the red light district
was
all about.
You were one of them?
I was not one of them.
So who was curious? You just followed suit then?
No, it was one of those things where you're like little kids. You're like, oh, who's gonna go in the red light district? And there were some guys who were professionals. They weren't kids because they had been in those professional environments in the locker rooms with men, and they were out. And for me, I was just like traumatized.
Which was a very small select group. The reason why I did it because my first confrontation in 2000, when my under 20 coach said, we're so naive. We were white. Upper middle class, let's be real honest. And these guys bucked the trend a little bit. Just look at them. But I had Stanford kid, a guy from Harvard, Andre Arkpan, Chet Marshall, Jordan Harvey on the left side, you know. All beautiful kids. They got a dog, they got a girlfriend, they got a house with a fence, and I don't know. But when it comes down to playing against Argentina, Brazil, where these guys come from the favela, they do anything. And Clint was the first one that I said was able to defend himself. So I said, I got to send him out into Amsterdam and understand what street life is all about. Maybe to get pickpockets and they understand to put your wallet not in your bag, but in your front pocket. That's life experiences that you can use in the field. I used to take this team to a Boca River game every year in the Bombonera and put him close to the crazy fence. And Chet Marshall, half an hour before the guard goes, "Oh my God, this is dangerous, coach. What's going on? All these fences, what's happening?" I know, yeah, dude, wait till the game starts. But true.
Yeah.
So I walked a fine line with minors to give them life experiences that I can use on the field. And as I said again, although Clint was quiet, he knew how to fend for himself and then still also do his things as well, which was unique.
And that way of thinking was so different, right? So he's putting players in those circumstances and those environments. And I think that's why we all respect you so much, because you've touched so many players. A number of the players in our generation that made it, you had coached them. They
Thank
had
you.
Gotten a chance to see and hear about those stories, which ultimately helped shape us.
And then when you see them playing in a World Cup, what's that moment for you? You must feel like a father
that's
figure
special.
At that point almost.
Yeah, it is. Because you feel you've Kate, I don't contribute a lot because I see these guys, as you know, at national teams 4 or 5 times a year qualifying, and then maybe a World Cup if we make it. So I'm really appreciative that I gave them a chance, but that they really made themselves eventually. I just pushed them along a little bit. Credit to all of them. You never played for youth national teams and still got there. Well done. You know, wrestler slash not knowing really his own body yet and then what you could do, all of a sudden, there you go. And you go to Europe. You say, you know what, MLS? I want to go to Europe. It's a show, whatever, the experiences. Clint used MLS as a springboard. You used MLS as a springboard as well. So, yes, it is special when I see these guys play on the highest level, represent their countries, which is a proud moment.
I didn't know some of these stories about the way that you went about your camps or the things that you did. Obviously, I wasn't there. But, like, so just hearing that, footballing part of it is one thing, but I appreciate the way that you're able to merge the two and you have a bigger picture perspective, because ultimately, yeah, we all want to be professionals, but they are kids. You're also grooming these young men and using that lens of sport and finding different ways to, you know, instill in them certain things that carry on beyond the pitch. I think that's equally as important. So, I mean, credit to you, man. I think we're seeing the fruits of some of the work that you put in with some of these guys.
Thank you.
It's very cool to be able to honor you like that.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
So there's another connection here, right, which is your first game back that you played after the car crash. You were broadcasting that. You were doing the commentary. You remember that?
Very much so. DC United is a legendary club in Major League Soccer, iconic. And he was one of the coaches that had helped really put this league in a competitive spirit and developing top players and coaching top players and having helped me on my pathway to becoming a professional, all of a sudden making it to that point where we're beating Spain in the Confederations Cup.
Scoring
in Azteca, living my dream, so close to finally playing in a World Cup, cut short because of this car accident. And then realizing, okay, there's bigger things to life than sports and soccer, but I have to promise myself that I gotta do everything I can to get back what I've lost. Because sometimes we take things for granted. And not that I didn't put everything into the sport, but I knew I took things for granted because I shouldn't have been in the position that I was in. So I said, I'm gonna commit myself 24 hours a day to get back on the pitch. And there was questions if I'd be able to run again. So I finally get an opportunity to take a loan to DC United from my French club, Sochaux. in my first game back. It's a year and a half. I'm nervous. I come off the bench, and we get a penalty kick, and the captain's Dax McCarty picks up the ball, and he hands it to me, and he's like, here's your moment. And so that was the match where I felt I was reborn, not only as a player, but as a person, because I understood how hard I had to work to get to this point and how much harder I have to work to sustain that level, but the appreciation for the game and the support that I had, the love that I felt in that moment is indescribable. And Thomas Rongen was in the booth, and he was calling those goals. I scored two goals, and against Chad Marshall, who he also helped develop, which was just one of those magical moments that will always stand out in my life. What was going through your mind seeing me? And
especially after all that rehab you had to do.
First, guilt.
Guilt?
Because I care deeply about the guys that I try to touch as best as I can so they can move up and play for the senior team. That I thought was my role as an under-20 coach. Develop them, make them better, which in all cases, although more different, but in your cases, that did happen. I never called you after the accident. And we had a connection.
Yeah.
Clint is more distant. But I also feel very bad about Clint because I knew that he lost his sister. And I lost my daughter probably a few months after the 2003 World Cup. I get a little emotional. And I never reached out to him because I do understand what he went through. And I know how big his sister's role was in your life. So I don't feel good about that. In saying that, it was an incredible occasion to call that game, obviously, and you do score, and you come back from this tragic situation that nobody thought you would even walk. So that's, in itself, obviously incredible.
Can I ask you a question? Is there a reason you didn't make those calls that now you say you wish you did?
I really don't know, Kate. I mean that sincerely. I didn't cry for 2 years. And I knew what he was going through, but I just couldn't pick up the phone, and I didn't know where to start. And I'm Dutch, I'm direct, so my emotions were all over the place. And I should have done, looking back, I'm almost 70, a better job in staying in touch, not just with a few, but with all the guys that I really genuinely cared about during my time that I touched you guys for a year or two at the under 20s, and I didn't. Something you learned from, obviously.
I mean, I feel like you should never lose sleep about anything with me. You gave me the opportunity of a lifetime. You allowed me to go Project 40. Being on that U20 team allowed me to go pro forever. I will be indebted, grateful for that, you know what I mean? And then even though we don't talk, there's always love there, you know what I'm saying? Because I know how big that was for me. So, you know, in terms of me and you, bro, even though we don't talk that much, it's always been love.
I know that with most of my players. It seems like I have a unique ability to have something about me that players, I don't know, maybe I'm Dutch, I'm democratic. I allow them to think with me. I make mistakes, they make mistakes. And I think my human side allowed these guys to get a little bit closer to me than to other coaches. And most of these guys that came back, Josie included, Eddie Johnson, that played for the MLS teams where they didn't play all the time. They would come to the under 20s where they would play all the time and enjoy those experiences just like I did, because these guys just loved it. And those groups were always tight knit as they were then, as you guys are now. That's a brotherhood.
The moment before I took the penalty, I could feel the pressure.
Wouldn't that have, was that the game that you would have come back to and played in after y'all qualified for the World Cup? Would it, the national team game, would have that been in D.C.?
The car accident was on a Monday night. We were playing Wednesday in D.C. So
it was almost like full circle in terms of
completely
that, right?
Full circle.
That's
and
crazy.
What was even more crazy about the situation was behind the bench, all the doctors and nurses who helped save my life that night were there. So I'm warming up and I'm looking at the doctor and he's like giving me the thumbs up. And I make the substitution. The penalty happens. He hands me the ball. I put it down. And I could feel the weight of the rest of my career, my life, the sacrifices I've made, and also at the same time, on the flip side, I let down a lot of people. I let down my family, I let down myself, I let down my family, I let down the fans, and I felt I owed everyone this moment to get back on the pitch, to do everything I could to show that I love the game and I appreciate, you know, supporters and the faith. And so when I see it hit the back of the net, it's that emotion. I'm really feeling it inside, yeah. But that emotion.
RFK has got a lot of iconic moments, all the way back to the Redskins, but also DC United, national team games. And I've been at most of them because I coached DC for quite a few years and stayed there for a long time when I was the under 20 coach or the Olympic coach or assistant coach of the national team. And that was in my top three of bone-chilling kind of moments that I've had in the booth. Brilliant.
This was cool to have you come through and share the stories. I really enjoyed it. I appreciate you coming through. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. And love you guys. You know that.
It's a mutual Philly, Ben.
Oh, my God. I'm getting up, Chucky. Thank you, Kate.
I appreciate you. Good to see you.
I should have told the story at the World Cup when I found out that Clint was a big-time freestyler. And we win the group. We beat Korea. Actually, you play a little bit in there.
Yes, there's a game that, like...
And Knox Cameron. You remember Knox?
Yep.
You know,
coach, striker, yeah.
Coach, fucking Clint Dempsey, man. He's a freestyler. So I go, okay, Clint, we're in the bus. It's great. And he starts, and the whole team... And you were... I didn't know Texas rap, man, was your, like, stuff in high school.
Yeah, my first car I had didn't have a radio, so it was like I would freestyle, like what we were doing. There was a whole Swisher House thing, and then that was my thing. When you were the new guy, it's like, do something.
Great.
It's either tell a joke or freestyle. And I just would freestyle.
All right, same. Tell a joke or freestyle.
Neither. Y'all ain't gonna do me like that. No, hey, it's been a good show. All right.
Go ahead.
Close us out. And it has been a good show.
You gotta do it right. Go ahead. Close us out. Freestyle.
Yeah. Close us out.
You gotta.
You see. You sing? Nah, I'm good. Yeah. Nah, I'm
on,
good.
Gotta,
they ain't gonna guess.
This is the
hey, Thomas. Wow. My brother.
Come on,
dude. That's nature to me.
Dude, if your former coach says that was one of the best performances, I mean this sincerely, on a bus in the UAE with 100 CIA agents with guns because of the war, and you're rapping, freestyling in Abu Dhabi.
In other words, why can't you do it in front of this audience?
Come on, dude. Come on.
I've never seen you turn one down.
All right, here we go.
All right.
Hey, we can rap about.
You pick it, brother.
The show, right. Man, the show.
It's the boy named Clint. These haters, they got me bent. Everybody know I rap like 50 Cent. Nah, I got the solo cup. Got the game sold up. Matter of fact, back in the day, you was in the World Cup for the U-20s, for the USA. Ball and parlay, my brighter than the sun, crush you up like Ira's son. Everybody know it's the boy before I was done.
Give me the light.
Hey!
Is that a new necklace, Kate?
It's just a little bit Versace. It's just a little something I got, you know?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
No, we ain't done yet.
We ain't done.
Jelani, I can't
hear
you.
Wait a minute, you thought we were finished? Hold up.
I thought we were finished. Why are we not done?
No,
because you know what? At the end of the day, Clint talked a lot about the way he came up,
Yeah.
Mo, we just heard about Mo. We heard about me, but we ain't heard
anything
about
you. Yeah, I don't like it to be about me. You know that.
So now,
yeah,
how'd you get started?
That was on you, Kate.
How did I get started in what?
And I would say your love for football, soccer, and getting into the TV side of things.
I mean, football, I feel like that's just culture back home, right? Like, that's part of life. My parents are both PE teachers, so they're both super into sports, but very into football particularly. My dad's a Man United fan. My mom's a Liverpool fan. They don't like to sit in the same room when those two teams play each other. They're hardcore with it.
And you side with your dad.
I did.
Any regret?
They each used to buy me different shirts, but
Any regret?
My favorite was that yellow and green. Remember the old school yellow and green away kit for Man United with Sharp on the front? But Manchester was home to me, so it just felt more natural to side with that. And TV, I didn't want to do at all. I wanted to be a translator. I had moved to Spain when I had finished high school, so I was like 17. I had done my degree in Spain, and then I went to Germany. I got offered like an internship at a TV station, and they had a sports anchor who was kind of volatile. And he anchored the sports news, and he stormed out one day. He quit over a dispute. And so they decided they wanted to cast within the network. And the boss of the network came to me and said, oh, I think you should try out. You already know the system. We know you can write scripts. You should try out. And I said, no, thank you. I have no interest in trying. I don't want to be on TV. And he said, just do me a favor. Just do it. If it's terrible, we'll never talk about it. But what you got to lose? Just do the casting, and I'll leave you alone. So I did the casting. It was like it was like sports news. So you're at a desk. I did not know what to wear. So
you weren't wearing your Fendi and Armani.
I'm not sure what was it. I borrowed a blazer off someone. It was too big for me. It was like an orange blazer. I looked about 40. And I did this casting, which I've since seen. Somebody sent it to me. Horrific. It's terrible. It's really bad. So I don't know what they saw in it, but they offered me the job. He came to me, said, the job's yours if you want. And I said, but this is not what I want to do. I don't want to do this. He said, listen, you're an intern. This is what you earn right now. It was not a lot. He said, if you take this job, you'll be doing the news, sports news, 5 days a week. I'll pay you this. I was like, oh.
He said, I'm in. Said,
wait a minute.
I'm
now.
In.
This became a little more interesting. And so I did it, and they gave me a day's training, and then they put me on the news. Which is a blessing because, I mean, you don't normally get that kind of exposure, that kind of opportunity, right, without having any experience, any desire. So I've always felt like this was something that, the kind of a path that God laid out for me because I didn't go searching for it, it kind of found me. And I feel really blessed because I feel like it's always been easy. Don't get me wrong, I work hard in any opportunity I'm given, right? I always want to be prepared. I always want to give my best. I never want to let anybody down, including myself. This is an industry a lot of people want to be in, and people are really hustling to get ahead in it. And God's just been good to me. Like, I haven't had that.
But I think also that you can see, like, the hard work that you put in, the prep and understanding, like, the flow of a show and, like, what questions to ask, like, the timing and stuff like that. That's something that is a skill that you had. You know, you're a good people person. You can read the room very well. I think you get along with a lot of different types of people, but also I think the hard work that you put in, and it helps us. Because I remember my first episode of being on there, and by you asking that difficult question, like, are you broke? You know what I mean? It just kind of like made me stop thinking about like being on TV, and then I'm able to like go in terms of being able to talk with you more and not be so nervous. Like, I think that's a skill that you have. But for me, I was just curious to, like, you do a lot of different sports, but it seems like you're more passionate about soccer. Would you say that that's true?
Yeah, football feels like home to me. I love boxing, too, and that's the other sport I really love to work in. But football has that kind of that familiarity, that feeling of, like, of comfort, of safety. Like, it reminds me of going home. It reminds me, even now when I go home, you know, my parents are nearly 80 now, and I go home on weekends. If I'm doing a Champions League show in London, I'll get the train to Manchester. And that weekend is about what football game is on, when are we watching it, watching match of the day. Like, all of that stuff just feels like home to me. So, you know, if I'm there, I'll go watch my nephew playing his game. I'll go watch my niece playing her game. So football just has that kind of, there's a love for football, which I feel like that can't be undone. You know what I mean?
Now we're all in the same space, right? And so I'm sure there's people that you look at and you're like, oh, I like certain bits of how they come across as an analyst. You try to pick and choose. I do the same thing, right? But you're still also creating your own style. You're shaping yourself into the way that you want to come across, right? Where does that all come from? Is that something that you saw someone else in your early days of getting into this space and were like, ooh, I like how she does that. I'm going to pick little bits and pieces from there. Or was it just kind of a natural progression for you?
So that's funny. I've thought about that sometimes. In part, I would credit my brother, right? Because I feel like I grew up in that culture of, like, that banter culture of my brother always being really quick to crack on me. And the only way you survived in that environment was if you had a quick answer, right? If you could come back, if you could hang with the boys in that way. And so I think, you know, it's a male-dominated space, essentially, still, and you have to be able to hang with the boys to be able to get their respect somehow. And so I think my brother shaped me in that way because he had no mercy. He's still like that. He'll destroy me at the first opportunity. And so I think I learned to kind of, like, not be intimidated by that male energy, not be intimidated to, like, crack a joke. Why shouldn't I? I think, you know, I remember the first show I did in America was I had hosted some event for Franz Beckenbauer in Austria, and the president of Fox was in the audience, and they had just won the rights to the 2015 World Cup, and so they came up to me afterwards and said, "Listen, we're going to do the World Cup. We'd be interested in you hosting. Are you open to it?" We would talk to Sky because Sky and Fox were like partners at the time, and so that opportunity came in about, and I got to do American television for the first time. Up until that point, I'd only done stuff in Germany, Spain, England, whatever, like Europe. And you guys know what that's like. You've been based over there. It's stiff. We do a different type of TV. It's not personality-driven. It's information-driven. And so I think I had been really drilled in that European way. And you become kind of boring because essentially everybody's doing the same thing. And I think it was that first taste of American TV where I really got to see, like, oh, you can let loose on American TV. This is different. I like that. I don't want to do European TV no more because that's boring to me now. And so I was very clear once I finished that 2015 World Cup, I was like, I want to be in America. That's where I want to be. That's the television that I look up to. That's the style of broadcasting that excites me. So that's where I want to go. And so that was always the aim from that point. But I genuinely, and I'm not saying this because this is like a CBS show, I genuinely don't think that I got to be me on TV until the Champions League show came about. And I had never been given that kind of rope before. And so all of a sudden you're like, okay, cool, let's just have fun. Let's do this. And I feel really blessed by that too, because I feel like the job I was doing at other networks, pretty much anybody can do that. You can go in, you can read a prompter, you can be informed enough to ask the right questions, but you're never really going to stand out. And I think CBS gave me an opportunity to potentially stand out because you get to do things in your own way and bring your own character into the mix. I remember when I was at Sky, I was at one point told, like, too much smiling from you, too much ha ha ha, like, welcome people in. Welcome people in and get to the point. And now if you think about, like, the Champions League, and one of the things that's so successful is, like, those stupid intros where I'll crack a joke at Micah's expense or whatever, and, like, that's part of the fun. Like, you getting up and doing the robot, and you boys all making, like, the squeaky noise because the robot was so bad. Like, that's,
or
just
Elvis.
Well, we all love some Elvis.
Elvis.
Right, like, those are moments that I just do you know what I'm weird? I feel like sometimes I don't remember that the camera's there. And perhaps sometimes we should all be more conscious that the camera is there, right? That would be wise.
That's but what happens when you get us together.
I think it's a blessing to me sometimes that I'm not super conscious. Hey, this is Champions League. Millions of people are watching or whatever.
Or you're like, hey, this is CONCACAF. And millions of people are watching. Now I'm vibing with my guys.
The thing is, do you feel like you get the chance to be yourself more on the Champions League show or being kicking it or with the shows with us? Like, where does that balance? You feel like it's exactly the same, or do you feel like even more so one way or the other, even though that was your first time where you felt like you got to be more of yourself?
Is there a right answer here, Clint?
I'm trying to get you to like our side a little bit better. But just give us the truthful side.
I think that I think both of them is me. I think I'm the same person on both shows. I feel like, I've always said this, like, I feel like this group is different in that we have a friendship that exists outside of the show. Not that that doesn't exist in London, but not in the same way. You know, like, you guys have always made me feel like I'm part of the family. Like, I remember being, I was going through a difficult time when we first started doing some of these shows. It was September, it was this time last year. And personally, I was in a difficult spot. And I was just down. And I remember, like, you know, when it's like when you're not dealing well with your own emotions, you kind of isolate from people a little bit. And I remember, like, avoiding, you guys would say, hey, come up, we're gonna get sushi in this room, or we're in such and such's room, like, come get food with us. And I was like, no, I'm in the gym, I'm this, I'm that. And you would be texting me like, no, we're waiting for you, like, are you coming? You never let me kind of not be part of the family. And especially at that time, like, that meant the world to me. And so there's a sense of family and, like, brotherhood, sisterhood that I don't have with another group. And so, yeah. Okay, Clint.
There we go. That's the answer. That's the answer. Hey,
clip it. Nothing's going to be heard about that one.
That's the clip.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So you didn't want to do this, okay, initially. You go from doing translation to now being one of the world's best. Do you ever think about that process and that moment that now, like us, when we were professional athletes, people looked up to us, people want to be us. I can't tell you how many people I've come across are like, I want to be Kate. Kate's the coolest. Like, I want to be on TV because of Kate.
Gold standard.
Has that sunk in? Are you aware of that? That you have the power to inspire so many people around the world, especially women, little girls, who are maybe not thinking TV was a, being around men, being, you know, in a male-dominated kind of room, being like the person that everyone looks to?
I don't live in a space where I think I'm good. So, like, it's hard for me to kind of,
Are you aware of your impact? Are you aware of, like, your influence?
I focus so much on what I would wish I had done differently that I find it hard to, like, think, man, I'm killing it, I'm this, I'm that. Am I aware that, like, I'm in places I never thought I would be and I'm super grateful for? Yes, absolutely. I know that when I was coming up, there wasn't a somebody like me that I looked at and thought, oh, maybe that's the job for me then. Like, I just never really assumed, I just kind of thought that wasn't really open to me. So if I think about it in those terms, I feel really fortunate that I get to be somebody that, you know, someone else's daughter potentially can at some point look at and be like, oh, I like how she does that. That's something I could do. So I love that I get to represent in that way. I find it hard to think that people could look up to the way I do things because that's just not who I am. But I definitely feel privileged to have maybe made a path for somebody else that now, I just think it's so important, like oftentimes in sports, and I don't mean to disrespect anybody with this, but traditionally it's often been the case that women have been given position because of a look, right? And it wasn't necessarily because of being competent or being qualified. Like, there was a look that you had to have, like it was a glamorous woman who was on sports sideline, right? And I think that damaged things for women who wanted to make headway in that area for a period of time. Because it set a really hard standard in terms of like, hey, if you want to achieve in this, like you have to look this kind of a way. This is what you'll be judged off. And B, it meant that men didn't look at women who'd been given those opportunities and think, well, man, they're really good at what they do. They deserve to be in this place, right? And so then you had to kind of battle with this idea that because you're a woman, you don't necessarily deserve to be here. I remember like when I started at CNN and I remember walking in and those guys were skeptical. Like they weren't convinced immediately, I don't think. And they're a great group of people and I have a lot of love for them. But I remember going for like a lunch on the first day and I really felt like, man, I'm here trying to convince everybody that I know sports. because I was questioned and drilled in a way that I don't think a man would ever have been drilled. Like, he would have been asked more personal stuff about who he was, his family, did he have kids, whatever, any of that kind of stuff. But I was there to prove that I was worthy of the job in a way that that's a hurdle that I think men don't have to jump through. So if I can be somebody that changes a man's perspective on female broadcasters, that's something that would make me really proud. Because I want people to feel like, not, oh, she's my favorite female broadcaster. I just want to be somebody's favorite. I want to be better than whoever else you think is good.
Oh, you are.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you ever, like, because you started off by saying, no, I don't want to do that. I'm happy being a translator. Like, this is what I want to do. Do you ever think of, like, look back and think, what if you would have actually stuck to your guns and been like, no, I'm going to be a translator? What life would be like at this point in time for you?
A lot less Versace, we all know that. yeah, man, I think I would have been happy. Like, that's still something, I love that kind of that world. I love learning different languages, culture, all of that stuff really appeals to me. But nobody's ever used it. And football's so international that it's kind of crazy that nobody's ever used it. And I remember CBS, so we were doing a live broadcast, Champions League, and you know how all those interviews come through the world feed and they're all done by different people in different languages and they're just available to you. And Pete, the producer, was in the control room in London. This is how I was told the story because I'm live on air. And he says, don't we have any, you know, we need interviews, we need some reaction from the games. And the British producer says, well, yeah, but we only have such and such and they're speaking Spanish. And Pete's like, so? She says she speaks Spanish. And Matt, the British producer, well, but what if, you know, what if she messes up? What if she doesn't understand? Like, what? Pete's like, well, we're gonna laugh at her. Like, she's told us all she's fluent. Like, we'll have some fun with that. So let's just throw it on. And so that was the first time I'd ever been put in that position. And that was really cool to me, where those kind of couple of worlds like collided. Same doing the Ballon d'Or, where, you know, you had, I think at one point I had Manuel Neuer, Lionel Messi, trying to think who else, somebody in French, and I can't, like, I switched from, maybe it was Karim Benzema or whoever on stage, and I got to switch from the French to the German to the Spanish. That's and wild. Look pretty cool doing it, you know?
Yeah.
That was my flex. Yeah. So I don't know, like, I'm really glad I went that route. I'm really glad that I got that qualification. It's definitely helped me. Am I glad that I'm so lucky. Like, this is such a good life. I get to travel all over. I get to hang out with people I really like, more so here than in London, but I like them too. You know,
yeah,
Clint?
That's what I'm talking about.
And I just, you know, life has been so good to me. God has been so good to me. So yeah, I wouldn't change it for the world. If someday, like, I always feel like there's a window on women in broadcasting, right? And so at some point, maybe my face isn't gonna fit anymore, and at that point, maybe that's what I'll go back to. But I don't know, maybe I'll just be selling like secondhand Versace out the trunk of my car. This is gonna keep me going.
It's a lot, you got a lot of that to sell.
So you flipped the segment on me. I should have known it was coming.
Yeah, it feels good.
But it's good, like, hearing the different stories, hearing your story. I mean, I think it's, every time that we get together, we find out something new about each other when we already thought we knew a lot. We know each other for a few years now. We've known each other more than that from the national team experience. But it's like, there's still stories that I hear from, like, having this opportunity for a show like this that, you know, I didn't necessarily know that was how it all happened for you to get to where you are today. It's cool. It makes us feel like even more tight-knit of a group. And, you know, I look forward to the other stories that we're going to hear in the future.
Amen. I'm loving this experience. Love you guys.
Love you too. Much love.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.